Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. Get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Cecil Williams forever changed San Francisco, the Bay Area, and even the world. As the longtime pastor at Glide Memorial Church, he led a congregation that was built from all the peoples of our area, infused with the spirit of care and social justice, and backed by one amazing church musical ensemble. He died this week at 94. And in tribute, we bring you an unusual show. We're rebroadcasting Cecil Williams' appearances both on this show with Michael Krasny and from back in 1971 with Belva Davis. And of course, there'll be Glide music as well. That's all coming up next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Cecil Williams died this week at 94. It was a life well lived. Alongside his wife, Janice Marikatami, who passed away 3 years ago, Williams built Glide Memorial Church into a leader in ministering to people other churches might have kept outside the doors. Glide was known for serving the poorest, most vulnerable residents of San Francisco, and they did it with love and joy and music. And in so doing, the congregation grew into one of the largest in the country. Accolades have poured in over the years. This week, Vice President Kamala Harris called Williams a beacon of life and love. So first today, we listen back to Cecil Williams in conversation with Michael Krasny in June 2012.
You started working with HIV patients and AIDS patients when people were still thinking, you know, this is the plague. You touch these people and you'll get immediately infected. You were also talking about same-sex marriages and performing them before it was an issue. I mean, you're a pioneer, really, in terms of reaching out to populations that, I really want people to know that, who don't know who you are, don't know the work you've done. I mean, it's been extraordinary, and it's been uplifting, and Methodist ministers are supposed to retire at age 70, and somehow this did not work in Cecil Williams'
case. No. They, what happened, you see, to follow the policy of the Methodist Church, they, of course, I retired when I was 70, and immediately they hired me back. As a person, staff member, you know. And so, naturally, I'm still there, of course, at 82 years old now. And for some reason, they have not said to me, Cecil, it's about time for you to retire again. So rather than go through a double retiring, I'm just here, you know, doing what I think becomes natural or impossible at times. Yes, you know what we've discovered, Michael, through the years, is make sure that whoever you come upon, no matter what they're facing, and especially if they're suffering severely, take them as they are and become close to them so you can be understand empathetically who they are. So you can then work with people who are not accepted and acceptable to a lot of groups in the community.
That's been your credo, and it's been one that, you know, has welcomed so many people who were outcasts and pariah and given them new hope and even feelings of grace. I mean, it's been remarkable work. I've always wanted to ask you this, though. I know you don't necessarily like to go into theological questions, but, I mean, you took the cross down early on, right?
But, I sure did.
What about people who are, for lack of a better word, evil? I mean, for example, Jim Jones was someone who you supported. He kind of
That's
snuckered
right.
you,
like right.
a
sure
lot of
did.
Other people. And he was, I think, certainly anybody would say, without hesitation, evil.
Yes, no doubt about it.
Evil people, how do they come in under this sense of acceptance and unconditional love for everybody?
Because, you see, what is important is if you accept them where they are, then they have not experienced that in most cases. And in most cases, then, what you do is they begin to trust you. They begin to seek you out. They begin to say, you know, I need something like what you've got, or I really would like to get to know you better, or I feel like you're doing something that I need, that kind of thing. So the need level and the relationship level begins to emerge and becomes very strong. And that being the case, because they have not experienced it, what you're able to do is affirm them in a new way, and they begin to hopefully come to grips with who they really are.
You hope. But sometimes they really are like mean as a rattlesnake.
That's right. That's right. And you know what, Michael? You have to accept the fact that they're mean as a rattlesnake. And say, you're mean as a rattlesnake. I love you, but you're mean as a rattlesnake.
Pretty hard to love, though.
but, yeah, right.
Let's go back to you taking down the cross, though. I mean, this was in the days when... Well, you still call yourself a liberation minister, don't you?
That's right, by all means.
That makes people think of Jeremiah Wright, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in liberating people and not interested in saving people.
So the church became really more a community
yes.
in many ways than a yes. place of salvation or
yes.
redemption. Or
That's right. That's right.
And it still is.
Of empowerment. We want to empower people so they can determine the destiny of their lives, so they can be able to put things together, so they will have a choice, so they will be able to work with people and become people themselves, become more human themselves. The important thing, more than anything else, is that we are trying to enhance humanity, and if you can get at that on a local, regional, national, and international level, you got something going for you.
We're talking with Reverend Cecil Williams as part of our First Person series, who has founded a remarkable place, Glide Memorial Church and the Glide Foundation. Glide Memorial Church has been called, among other things, an oasis in a desert of homelessness. It's tougher in this recession, isn't it, Cecil?
Yeah.
I mean, to put it mildly.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I don't know how in the world we get out of this morass, we get out of this situation, except the fact that I'm convinced that people at heart have something if you can get their hearts open, their minds and their hearts. That's very important. There are a lot of people who are making it now, a lot of people who are pulling it off, who are beginning to emerge as people who have resources, all kinds of resources that can lift people up and help people move on. But the problem is that they are frightened themselves because they have not gone far enough to understand that they can count in what I call a revolution of the world if, in fact, they give more and direct more and act more proficiently and certainly more lovingly. It's just critical that justice begins to prevail in the lives of people who have. If we can get to the people who have with justice, we could do a lot more than what we're doing at this particular time.
I've been trying to do this for, well, about a half a century.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
yeah.
It's been a long road. Do you ever get the feeling of frustration in all this? Or that sense of, you know you've made an impact, but how much of an impact? And is it enough of an impact?
That's what we're trying to say in our new book, Jen and I are working on, which will come out in February of next year. We're trying to say that whether it was Angela Davis, whether it was the Black Panthers, whether it was groups of all sorts, of all dimensions, individuals, civil rights people. I had, at one time, Michael, on a Sunday morning, four people to walk in on a Sunday celebration that had swastikas on their foreheads. And I knew that some of my folks were ready to throw them out and everything else. And so I told folks to cool it. I said, you know, just let's cool it and let them stay here. Let them see and experience something that they have not gone through before in their lives. They've gone through violence and all this. Well, I did a little sermonette to them. Anyway, it came out that after four Sundays, they came back and the swastikas were gone. They had removed them. And they said to me, Cecil, you know, we thought that we could do this place in. We thought we could do this people in as well. But we were the ones who got done in.
When is this? What year was this?
This was like in 1982,
and 83. You ever figure out why they came in the first place? They just want to make trouble? And
I think they wanted to make trouble. Yeah. They thought we jumped them, you know. And this is a good thing we didn't, because there are folks that would jump them, I tell you.
They would have been jumped, but they probably had were carrying some shivs or something like that, too, one can imagine. You, more recently, provided food for the occupied.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a no-brainer for you, I imagine, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure. You see, when people are in need and people are trying to find their way, people who really wanted to be make aware this issue of the 99% of those who don't have and the 1% of those who do have, you see. When you're trying to make that kind of point, it's critical to help people at the very point and the very level of their responses. And they sent word to us, if you got food left over, you know, give us some food. We need food down here at this campment in San Francisco. So we got together real quick, and we're very good at this because we have an organization that really can operate. And in a short span of time, we had food there for them. And they ate, and they applauded, and they were happy about it. And it helped them to, I think, just say, thank you, thank you, thank you. We will continue the struggle, but thank you. And we did that some three or four times, and that was about it. But we did it because we knew that these are our sons and our daughters, and we don't want our sons and daughters to go down, do we? We want to lift them up. And so to support them was to say, we're with you, we support you, we understand what you're attempting to do, and keep on doing it.
We're listening back to Forum host Michael Krasny's 2012 interview with Glide Memorial Church pastor Cecil Williams. And that's the Glide ensemble you're hearing now. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Back with more after a quick break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence. June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal, and today we're listening back to former Forum host Michael Krasny's 2012 interview with Cecil Williams, the founder of Glide Memorial Church. He died this week at the age of 94. We're going to get back to that interview in just a bit, but first, let's listen to a clip of an interview with Williams by the great pathbreaking journalist Belva Davis on KPIX TV 1971.
It's a black thing, really. Much of my style is very black, but it's also some things that I've imagined that I could do, and I've stretched out beyond some of these things. I keep stretching. I'm always stretching. I dramatize much of what I do. I feel very free and comfortable in what I do. When people try to put me down, it's all right. I can deal with that. I deal with the unpredictable. I'm not afraid. I'm not scared. I'm not frightened by what happens, you see, as I speak. So I've stretched as much as I possibly could, will continue to stretch, and wherever that takes me, I'm going to follow it.
You've said yourself that you've set your priorities with the community, the broad spectrum of the community. Why then do you always choose the radical issues to align yourself with?
Mainly because that's where my head is, and that's where my heart is, and that's where my life is. That's where I put my body, the most radical things. I believe that that we have to radicalize things to get things done very quickly. Social change means rapid social change, it seems to me. Also, I believe that Jesus Christ was a revolutionary and he was a radical, and you got to be out there. You got to be where they are.
Why do you think hundreds of people stand in line to get into church here on Sunday?
Basically because we're meeting their needs. You see, I'm convinced that some of the gravest needs that we have at this particular time, as it relates to what may be called the life of the church, which I would not call, this is really not a church, it's a community of people because they come from all over. It's a community. And if you want to call that a church, yeah, church means community, you see. One of the basic needs of people is, as I see it, is to be loved, is to have people care for them, is to share with people. That's a basic need. People want to know that they're loved.
Do you think there should be or should not be any delineation between those things that you should feel when you're in the church other than those things that you should feel in some other social gathering?
No. Whatever I feel in church, I can feel any other place. Like, what makes church so different from any other place except the fact that we're a community of people who have gathered and who want to share with each other some very basic things. People tell me, this is the first time that we've come to church and felt good. Most churches people go to feel guilty. I don't know why churches want to make people feel guilty. We work out our problems together, you see. It's when we do it as a community. And that's what we ought really be about. Uniquely, then, this is what we provide at Glide, hopefully. That cannot be provided at the Fillmore West, or which can be provided at some traditional church, you see. We do it together. I don't want to be the big father confessor.
That was Belva Davis in 1971 talking to Cecil Williams in an interview that Michael Krasny references in this Forum show from 2012.
You know, what you've talked about sort of reflects about how consistent your philosophy has been and the desire to care for people. I happened to see an interview you did back in 1971 with the great Belva Davis, and you were talking a lot about race at the time and radical alignments and things of that sort. How much have things change, particularly because of, or your attitudes and your philosophy changed. I couldn't help reflecting on that somewhat myself.
And I'm 82. I don't move like I used to move.
Well, you still got your mojo. I said that before we went on the air. Right. Last hour we were talking about loneliness and old people. Maybe talk to you about how you keep that mojo electrical and on fire. But talk about how things have changed just in terms of the philosophy, because they have.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The bottom line for us has always been unconditional love and unconditional acceptance. Those are radical positions. Now, that doesn't say you're going to do it, but it says that you can try. and that you can practice and you can engage it and you can interact it with people. And that's what you attempt to do, very much so. And we fail at times, and sometimes we make it. But whatever the circumstances, it counts in the long run. And what has happened through the years, for instance, one thing that's dramatically changed at Glide is that on Sunday morning, you might even see three or four or five countries represented. And I'm talking about from France, that Sunday morning, there may be 60 people. From England, there may be 40 people. From Japan, there may be 100 people. From different countries, South America, just a number of countries. We are really now reaching out to the world, which we were not doing, in a way to say to them, we want you to experience a spirit that has to do with bringing the world together for a short span of time, to be a part of gospel and jazz and certainly blues. And you put that combination together with the music and then with the kinds of contemporary expressions that we do. And the preaching is very contemporary, of course, all these sorts of things. And your theology, even though it may be basic and strong in regards to loving people and accepting people, you begin to say, no, we cannot do this because we have run the course, or we just didn't make it, or it's failing.
But there's a more, you say, international flavor, and that has suggested you talk about speaking contemporary as well. So you've moved along with the times, obviously.
That's right.
You've had to move along
with
the times.
You have to. If you're going to do it, you have to move along with the times. And the times dictate to us that you have to change. It means changing, and that's exactly where we are. We do a lot of changing, and people understand that. People come to us right now from all kinds of situations saying, help us, do this with us, let's work together on this. If we work together on all of the many people that have tried to get us to appear with them, we would have gone down, we would have sunk, we would have been in quicksand. But no, the important thing is we have taken our time now much more than we did before. And we've said, this we will do, but this we will not do. We're better at that than what we have been. But we're also saying we always want to be on the cutting edge. And you stay on the cutting edge by being with those who are on the cutting edge and who literally are in need of that which you find yourself facing from day to day. So we're not afraid. We're not holding back still. But we are now more worldwide, more international in how we approach the situation and what we do in the situation.
I hesitate to use this word, but if there were an equation to talk about the success of Glide and the way that it's reached so many people, it has to do with extending humanity toward feelings of community and caring, the things that you mentioned, unconditional acceptance, unconditional love, but also you use the word spirit, and the spirit is a lot of it. I mean, that feeling of being...
Yeah.
Think about Blake, who said, you know, energy is pure delight. And there's something about the nature of energy. I know we're both slowing down. But, you know, the fact is, it's still in there in you, and I hope it's still in there in me.
Yeah, it's that, Michael. There's no doubt about
but
it.
But you're a model to us. I mean, you really are, because you still have that spirit very much inflamed and alive in you.
Yeah. Well, you know, the important thing, I grew up in a family in San Angelo, Texas, years ago, where every night after we had come home and had supper, we called it supper then, we would go outside on our front porch. We would sing, the family would, and we'd sing spirituals, and we'd sing gospel, and we would sing songs that mattered, that helped us to feel strong and vibrant and full of spirit. And somebody might even get up and start dancing, and several people might, other folks would. Or we would not only dance, but we'd clap our hands and shout, and just, as we would say, cut up, you know, just really enjoy it very much. But what we were doing was sustaining a kind of spirit.
One question which I was somewhat hesitant to raise, but probably a lot of people would want to ask you is there anything that rises to your mind at this autumnal phase of your life. I won't say winter because you're still, as we see. In fact, I'm looking at an email here from a listener who writes, Cecil Williams, 82, fully engaged in serving others, sharp, healthy, happy, and not lonely. Because we were talking about loneliness and aging in the last hour. What do you think is, when you think about what made the most difference in the work you've done over the years, or what gives you the most pride, or for that matter, had the most impact? What comes to the top?
No doubt about it, Michael. The fact that we never gave up on the poor. We've never given up. From the early stages of my existence, when my mother pointed at me one day and said, you're going to be a minister, we immediately began to find our way with helping people who were poor, even though we were poor. So it's in my blood and in my bones. And even now, we have a group, for instance, just to cite something for you called a Speak Out. And every Wednesday they get together. And these are all folks from the street, you know, from the most desperate situations in the Bay Area. And they come in and they speak out. They tell their stories. They say things that would be somewhat difficult for some folks to hear, but they say them anyway because that's that truth. And what they do in telling the truth is it helps them to say, you know, somebody's listening to me, because the people that's sitting there also know a lot of them who are telling the truth. And if they start lying, they'll say, stop lying. You know, tell you, be yourself. You don't have to pretend. You don't have to put on. But the thing that's been most deep and resourceful and passion-ridden for me is being able to stay with the poor.
Well, then I need to ask you, because people whom I know you know and probably admire, like Cornel West and Tavis Smiley, have been highly critical of President Obama for not doing enough for the poor. You feel this, and they're very disappointed and frustrated.
Yes.
You feel the same way?
Yeah, sure I do. And who is doing their best, you know? It's just one of those things. Poor people are still a phenomena. People are still left out. Poor people are still degraded. Poor people are still denigrated. Poor people know, in a real sense, that they're not wanted. But we want them. We want the poor. And we will continue to want the poor and go get the poor if we have to.
Now, before I go to callers, here's Steve who says, it is essential to provide immediate aid to the homeless, hungry, and ill, but it is also unacceptable for a person to live the rest of their lives on the street, drug addicted and standing in line for a meal at Glide. How do we move to long-term solutions that empower and equip people to rejoin society and contribute to themselves and others?
Basic. Be able to meet first and foremost the basic needs of poor people. That means hunger. That means home, a place where they can go. We recently had in one of our, we have three new buildings, by the way, that we've built for the homeless.
Oh, congratulations on them.
Really something.
Yeah, lots of people in them, too.
Oh, lots of folks in them. It's really something. But the important thing that occurs is the fact that two people were getting ready to move out of our new facility. And we said, my God, why moving out of our new facility? They had just bought a home. They're buying homes, Michael. Poor people are buying homes. When people start buying homes, you know that something's taking place.
Well, let's hope it doesn't wind up underwater mortgage.
<You're right.
laughs> Enough of that affliction, right?
But food and homes and clothing and comfort, just being comfortable, being able to put things together. It's important for poor people to have ways by which they can connect things, make things, help put things together, and that they can feel like they matter, that they are doing something that now is fulfilling some of the needs that they have. And they also give back to the community. So it's a combination of all of that. Don't give up on them, whoever you are. We never give up on anybody, and you can't do it, because if you do, you then set forth a hole in trying to fulfill many of the holes that we're trying to fulfill.
Well, let's fulfill our obligation to our listeners, who many of them want to talk to you. We start out with a caller from New York City. Nicole, join us. Welcome.
I just wanted to thank Dr. Williams, because Glide is one of the things I miss most, having moved from San Francisco to New York City. It's the only place that, as a Jewish person, I really felt not just accepted, but, you know, valued and included in a Christian service. And I just, it's such a wonderful, magical place. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for
thank
that
you.
Call.
Thank you.
I mean, it's been diverse all along. I mean, there are, talk about the international flavor of Glide congregants or churchgoers, every religion and non-religions. I mean, atheists and agnostics.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right. That's
come
right.
to the congregation and feel welcome there. How many stories do you have, like the Chris Gardner story, though, you know, where he was poor,
yeah.
and he was really indigent in every
that's
sense
right.
of the word, and now, you know, it's a real success story.
We have stories that are just breathtaking. And they're breathtaking because they are not only like the Chris Gardner, but some of them even exceed the Chris Gardner, a few of them. But the important thing is that we can see those folks who are making changes in their lives. And it's so good because not only do they come up and say, thank you, I now have, and I'm now doing, and I'm now getting things going. When they do that, you know that something's taking place. And I tell you, there are more people who are now rebounding, and having more resources than ever before, as far as I'm concerned. People are learning, and they're discerning. But you see, the problem still is that America has not said, these are our children. These are our people. These are our human beings, because we keep mistreating them. We don't want to bring them up to where we are, or we don't want them to get what we've got, or we don't want them around very long, you see? And so when we learn that, then we will learn that human beings who are poor are ready to not just stay in poverty. They want some of the good life, too.
We are listening back to a 2012 interview Michael Krasny did with the legendary Cecil Williams, pastor of Glide Memorial Church. He died this week. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We'll be back with more from the interview and a sermon after a short break. Till then, the Glide Ensemble.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're listening back on Michael Krasny's 2012 Forum interview with Cecil Williams, pastor of Glide Memorial Church. He died this week at 94.
Let me bring on another caller, and that's Sacramento caller Pamela. Join us. Good morning.
Hi. I'm actually from South San Francisco. I'm a United Methodist pastor. Hello, Cecil.
Hello there.
And at our annual conference of California, Nevada, United Methodist Church, we're in Sacramento this week, so I'm just calling from there, but I'm actually a pastor in South San Francisco at Hope, and I've followed Cecil for a very long time, so I wanted to say how much I appreciate his courage in allowing the nature of inclusivity and the great diversity we have in the United Methodist Church to allow all of us to, I mean, really, I think Cecil saying anybody can walk in the path of love, regardless of what faith you're in, regardless of where you are, has really encouraged a lot of us other pastors. And one of the things I think that's really, really important in...
Pamela, I've just got to ask you, would you let people with swastikas walk into your church?
Of course, as well as I let prostitutes, as well as...
Okay, I just had to ask.
I mean, honestly, we have old people and young people. One of the great things we do right now is have sack suppers, and we share them in the park, in Orange Park in South San Francisco, and eat with folks who want to come and share the sack suppers we build. We took our grass out in the backyard and made gardens so that we could harvest vegetables for the seniors who are poor in San Bruno, Daly City, in South San Francisco. And I'm a strident Christian, but I really appreciate the language of being able to not decide for people how they're going to reach the God of love. And that's really a powerful voice, I think, that Cecil has always been strident about. And that's really a great gift because it allows those of us who want to be courageous in there to step on those very shoulders. Same as what Mrs. Glide did.
Well, thank you, Pamela. Good to hear from
you.
And she's talking about harvesting vegetables. You've been teaching urban farming through Glide now, too.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, we've got our gardens, and they are growing vegetables. And, of course, those vegetables are used in our restaurant. I say our restaurant, in our dining room. And here we are eating from they are rooftop gardens, so we're eating from the rooftop, you know, and
something that, celestial almost about that,
exactly.
Heavenly. Yeah. Gets closer. We'll bring another caller on here, and that's you, Shell from Hayward. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I've had two bumper stickers. One was to remind me to be patient. But the other one, I didn't know who the quote was from. It was, I guess, Pope John V. It was, if you want peace, work for justice. And I saw the fine print and his name underneath it after a period of time. And I was wondering if the Reverend could maybe say something about how that actually works in life.
You mean how justice brings peace?
Or the quote from, I guess, the Pope was, and there's so many different popes, if you want peace, work for justice.
Yeah. You believe that, don't you, Cecil?
Sure. Yeah. My God.
You're God.
Yeah, right. We can't leave justice out. There's just no doubt about it. If we do, but a lot of folks do because they're more interested in an individual kind of resurrection or an individual kind of redemption rather than working for justice, where a lot of people from different disciplines and different individuals as well as different communities are able to be a part of that act of justice. If we can come to grips with the fact that people are severely going through things that they don't really have to go through many times, and provide justice where there's equity, where there's equality, where there are people who participate in regards to sharing justice, sharing, making sure that that whatever rules and regulations that are not sufficient in regards to our communities, let's make sure we change those many directions and many rules and regulations, because they tie us up and they keep us so tied up we're not able to be spirit-minded and spirit-loving. So, yes, justice will, no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. Justice will prevail. And when it does, it brings about peace.
You believe that trajectory that Martin Luther King talked about, moving us morally and historically toward justice, I would guess, though, when the caller mentions peace and justice, or justice being a way to peace or a path to peace, you have to think about the fact that injustice leads to so much malice and yes, frustration and enmity and all of that.
That's right. And
he mentioned the bumper sticker. Now, this wasn't a bumper sticker, but it was kind of an aphorism from Cecil Williams going back a number of years, where you said, you lose so you can live. You need to lose. You talked about the necessity of loss as a way of living.
Yes, yes. I came up as a child, and even in my college and seminary days, as knowing that that everything was not going to be all right, that there was a dark side to life. And I also, I came up understanding that sometimes we just don't get it. And we don't get it because we don't want to get it. And if we don't want to get it, we do things not to get it. And so the important thing that what we must begin to understand is that out of loss can come a sense of destiny, a sense of comfort, and a sense of action that will take us beyond some of the possibilities that we think we don't have. So, yes, it's critical, I mean very critical, to understand that we are now evolving into a situation where people are saying, it's about time for all of us to find ways to at least get together every once in a while, so that in that getting together every once in a while, we will be finding new strangers, new people, new understandings, that we can all work toward having something that will embrace, give us what I again call unconditional love and unconditional acceptance.
Some web comments. A lot of conversations among clergy today is about the dying church and what do we do? How would you guide clergy and congregations today to reignite their church communities?
Yeah. I wish I had the kind of mojo that would, that I could take a paintbrush and paint these words on the walls of the world by saying, don't ever give up, but don't ever give in. However, if you really want to reach people, you've got to do something that is different. You can't go the same old course with the same old stuff, expecting some kind of response. It does not work and will not work. People want something that matters. And what really matters is a radical love, one. What really matters is taking risk, what we call having courage. What really matters is making sure that you are inclusive in what you do. Go for all kinds of folks. Stop trying to just get your kind or people who look like you. It will not work. You can't do it. It will not take course. So finally, what you got to do, it seems to me, is you got to do a lot of talking and walking and praying and loving and a lot of...
And walk the talk.
And walk the talk, yeah, by all means.
Talking again with Cecil Williams. You know, when I used the word evil before, I was a little hesitant because it's a theologically loaded word. But here's Sarah who says, although we seem to be in agreement about it, you and me, Sarah writes, I really take issue, she says, with categorizing people as evil. It's simplistic and frankly unsophisticated. People are more complicated than that. You use Jim Jones as an example of evil. Jim Jones was a delusional, damaged, and misguided person. Labeling people as evil leads us to be punitive as society and doesn't help anyone. I like to think we are more evolved than that. But you know something? It's difficult to find a better word for some people.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
That's right. You're right. You're definitely right there.
Regarding Reverend Williams' comment on the 1%, I question the use of the 99% versus the 1% base of the argument. I've always thought it was the top 5% that was the problem, if only because the 1% couldn't do it without the legal, political, and economic apparatus that the upper 5% controls.
I want you to know that I'm not going to debate that issue. Because, you know, the percent is really not that important to me. In a sense, the real thing that's important is people meeting the needs of those who are really facing difficult times. Again, the homeless and the poor. And let's go for them for change. Let's really open up to them for change.
There's an email from Dave who says, Reverend Williams, the work and position of Glide Memorial are wonderful gifts to God and the community. In particular, your congregation is very inclusive and loving to all, including gays. How do you reconcile the United Methodist Council position, which condemns homosexuality and prevents gay clergy and is against same-sex marriage? I've been a member of the United Methodist Church, but given their stance as a global organization, this brings me great pause.
Not only gives me great pause, I turn away from them. I don't go to Methodist meetings anymore. I don't go to Methodist.
Are you listening in Sacramento? But why stay as part of the broader
conferences.
Church? Why remain part of the broader church, though?
Well, you see, they need us, and we need them. They need us because they need to know that there's a church in San Francisco that's growing immensely. That's alive, that one of the fastest growing churches in America, and that it's a church that is, without any doubt, one that people talk about, and even the Methodists talk about it. And there was a time they used to talk against us. Now they're talking in behalf of us. How in the world could you be doing this? Oh, my goodness, it really is good. And they come and drove to investigate, to see, to have a time to look around and understand, and even ask us, how do you do it? And so we show them all sorts of things. But the important thing is, it was the church that I grew up in, but I knew that as I continued to come along the way, and especially as soon as I got to Glide, I knew that I would be a different kind of minister. And that's exactly what I am. I'm different. I want to be different. I work to be different and will continue to be different.
Said with the kind of conviction and enthusiasm we have come to expect from you all these years. Here's David, who says, I often hear that the cause of long-term homelessness is drug addiction and mental illness. I also sometimes hear that we have plenty of funds dedicated to services for the homeless. If these are both true, are we not fighting the root cause? Or are we unable to help these people because they refuse help? Well, they don't refuse help. They come to...
Yeah, right.
Some do, though.
Yeah,
indeed,
yeah.
Some do. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I think that you're going to find that people are not all inclusive in what they do. They're not just a group of folks who think alike, who act alike, who pull things off alike. You're going to have among the ranks of the people those who want to do other things and those who make other commitments and those who feel strongly that, well, this is not working for me. If it doesn't work for you, go some other place or get to something else or go to those things that you finally find that matter. But don't just say it's different or it's no good and leave it alone. Find something of your own. and make sure that it counts in your life, because that's the important thing. It's you who must, we call it self-definition. You must engage in self-definition. And when you do that, you got something that's lifting you up and taking you in the course that hopefully will give you a sense of being the kind of person you really want to be.
But self in conjunction with community and with loved ones and with other people. And we're not just talking about the self here.
No,
by any
not
means.
By any I mean, means. No
you
way.
You can't separate that.
You can't separate it. No way.
That was Reverend Cecil Williams, former head of San Francisco's Glide Memorial Church. He died this week. He was talking to Forum host Michael Krasny in 2012. Now we're going to listen to a part of a 1997 sermon by Cecil Williams called What in the World is God Doing? And we'll go out with more music from the Glide Ensemble. Thanks for listening. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
God is... I'm going to get biblical on you this morning now.
That's all right.
Can it be good? Is it all right? All right. God is creating. I know a lot of people say, yes, Cecil, but in the Bible it says that God created for 6 days and rested on the seventh day. No. God has always been creating and still creates. God's creation is in motion because what God is creating is a new community, a society of people, a group of folks who are ready and responsible to take on the world and give the world a new understanding of how it can love mankind and womankind and childrenkind throughout the world. And when people are in suffering and when people are walking miles and miles as refugees trying to find the place to stay or to just be safe, there are those in the world who will cry out, no longer, no longer. God is creating a new people who will say, no longer.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.